Time now for Western Michigan at Work, the program that brings you each week the story of one of the industries or professions in which the people of Western Michigan earn their living. Tonight we are to hear something about the commercial fishing industry. Here is your guide to Western Michigan at Work, Dr. Willis Dunbar.
This is a report on an industry that seems threatened with disaster. Up and down the coast of the Great Lakes, a clan of tough men have for years earned a living by taking fish from our large inland waters and shipping them to the great markets in the Middle West. Today, the commercial fisherman is a gloomy man, and in many cases is turning to other work, if indeed he has not already done so. One recent report tells that 12,000 fishermen have been thrown out of work. Many fishing fleets are being dismantled. At long last, the Congress and the state legislatures and the conservation departments are recognizing the danger. But the commercial fisherman shakes his head and says, too little and too late. The villain in the piece is the sea lamprey, an ugly eel-like thing, one of the lowest forms of marine life. Until recently, the lamprey lived at the bottom of the ocean. But for some unknown reason, the critter decided to migrate. It entered the Great Lakes by clinging to the bottom of ships, and then was spawned and multiplied in alarming fashion. The lamprey attaches itself to a fish by suction cups. It has tiny but very sharp teeth to get through the scales and the skin. Then it sucks the very lifeblood from the fish and leaves it lifeless. The chief victim so far has been the lake trout. In Lake Huron, the catch used to average about 1.5 million pounds per season. Last year, only 5,000 pounds of trout were taken from that lake. As we shall show in a moment, the same thing is happening now in Lake Michigan. To find out more about the commercial fisherman and this menace he faces, I journeyed to Saugatuck a few days ago and spent several hours with two commercial fishermen. One of them, Charlie Diepenhorst, isn't doing any fishing at all now. Says it wouldn't pay to get his rig in shape. There used to be 7 commercial fishermen operating out of Saugatuck. Today only one is still in business, George Sewers. George has been a fisherman ever since he was 10 years old, and he'll soon be 60. He has sold out 3 times and never was able to stay away from it. There apparently is a fatal fascination about commercial fishing, just as there is about fishing for sport. A couple of years ago, fishing was good in Lake Michigan. 600 or 800 pounds of fish would be pulled up with one string. George showed me his records for last September. He was still getting around 250 or 300 pounds to a haul. But this spring, there just aren't any trout at all. One catch consisted of just 7 fish. In the old days, the fishing tug went out every morning, pulled in one string of nets, and put out another. A string, by the way, consists of 14 boxes of 4 nets each, or 56 nets. The whole string is sometimes about 3 miles long. Floats carrying flags indicate the location. The nets are left for 6 or 7 days, so that meant that George had that many strings out all the time. Now he has just one. He's fishing mainly for chubs now. I found George and his 2 sons mending nets in a nice new building that had been erected only a couple or 3 years ago. The building was on the bank of the Kalamazoo River, and just outside was the new tug that George had paid $18,000 for 3 years ago. It's an all-steel boat capable of taking about anything the lake has to offer. It has the latest type of engine, electric power, radio communication, and all the necessary equipment. George has about 200 boxes of trout nets, which deteriorate rapidly. Within 2 years or so, they won't be any good. I could readily understand the atmosphere of pessimism and gloom that surrounded the place. I found George rather bitter because nothing of consequence had been done to save the industry he loved. He took me out to the river and pulled up a string with 3 pickerel on it, each of which had lamprey marks in it. You see, he said, now that they've killed all the trout, they're going after the other fish. He told me they'd found lamprey on almost every variety of fish. And a news item the other day told of one being found in a stream near Fenville, quite a ways inland from the lake. The presence of the lamprey in Lake Erie was recorded as far back as 1921, and alarm was expressed over its possible effects on the fish supply of the lakes, but nothing was done about it then or for many years thereafter. The lampreys migrated up the Detroit River, and by 1933 were establishing themselves in Lake Huron. By 1936, fishermen at Rogers City were complaining of badly marked fish, and during the next 3 years there was a steady decline in the catch. Finally, a group of sportsmen in Rogers City became interested and suggested an experimental weir be installed at the mouth of the Aquacock River to catch the lampreys as they went upstream to spawn. Such a weir was installed with the cooperation of the Michigan Conservation Department. The Michigan Fish Producers Association was formed in 1940, and it began to agitate for action. Just when a movement had started to enlist the help of the federal government, the war came along, and nothing of any consequence was done for half a dozen years. But the war didn't stop the progress of the lamprey. It migrated through the Straits of Mackinac into Lake Michigan, and it's already in Lake Superior, but not in nearly such great numbers. An annual appropriation of $20,000 was finally made by Congress to study the lamprey and find out what could be done to check it. Meanwhile, the states bordering the Great Lakes and the province of Ontario had started a cooperative movement along the same lines. Here is a report on what has been found out so far. The adult lampreys average almost a foot and a half in length and weigh about 6 ounces. When they're ready to spawn, they move up into the streams which feed the lakes. The evidence indicates that they feed little, if at all, once the eggs and sperm begin to develop. They enter the streams about the time of the smelt runs, April or May. They construct their nests in gravel, over which a current passes consistently in one direction. That's why they seek the streams rather than the lakes. A female lamprey will lay about 61,000 eggs, of which about 5% will spawn. The larvae burrow in the soft bottoms of the streams where they live from 3 to 5 years, and then they change into the adult form at a size of 6 to 8 inches, descend into the lake, and begin to prey upon fish. The investigation has proved conclusively that the lamprey will attack other fish if they can't feed on trout. In an aquarium, 13 smallmouth bass were attacked, of which 12 died after the first attack. The presence of mature or spawning lampreys was verified in no less than 92 Michigan streams and reliably reported in 18 others, a total of 110. They have become established in 2 inland lakes and in 2 others, Lake Charlevoix and Pentwater Lake, which have a connection with Lake Michigan. The streams examined yielded several thousand lampreys each. A good deal of research has gone into finding out whether the lamprey itself has any commercial value. Its vitamin A potency and oil yield are too low for commercial exploitation. They're not good for anything for food, although a Canadian firm holds out some promise of success in experiments in processing and canning them. At least 9 methods of lamprey control have been considered, but none of them seem to hold out much possibility of success. The approach has been to try to discover some vulnerable point in the life cycle. Obviously, it's useless to attempt to get them out of the lake. They must be destroyed when they come up the streams to spawn. Among the suggestions that have been studied are weirs, electric screens, electric shockers, flume traps, poison, and destroying the nests. Each one of these methods has its drawbacks. The streams in which the lamprey can spawn are so numerous that it would be very expensive to do all this. Thought has been given to importing a natural enemy of the sea lamprey. But who knows where to find this natural enemy? And if it could be discovered, it might do more damage than the lampreys themselves. The fishermen say that it looks now as if the lamprey would destroy the fish in the Great Lakes and then die of starvation. The lakes might then be restocked, but that would be a long process. The present outlook seems to indicate that the best way is to erect some sort of a barrier, a weir, or electric screen, or trap at the entrance to the streams which the largest number of lampreys seem to use. There are still a lot of unanswered questions about the lamprey, and when the answers are found, the way may be discovered for a method of ridding the lakes of this nuisance. Why is it that the lampreys have not done any great amount of damage in Lakes Erie and Ontario? Why do the lampreys enter certain streams and not others with apparently similar characteristics? Do lampreys usually return to their parent streams? Can the lampreys readily become residents of inland lakes? Will they destroy all other fish to the extent that they have destroyed trout? One thing that delays a full-fledged attack on the lamprey problem is the fact that there still are lots of fish available, and even lots of trout. Receipts of fish on the Chicago market last year set an all-time record. A total of 94,650,000 pounds of fish were received in the Chicago market. British Columbia furnished 17% of that amount, Massachusetts 12%, and Wisconsin 10%. Whitefish topped the list of freshwater fish with a total of 7,728,000 pounds, and 6,118,000 pounds of trout were received. But those trout came largely from Lake Superior, although quite a sizable catch was made last year on Lake Michigan. It's rather interesting to note that just a few years ago, there were very few whitefish caught on the Great Lakes, and some fishermen thought they were becoming extinct. Then suddenly they began to reappear in large numbers. Fishermen have a sort of blind, unreasoning hope that some way, somehow, the trout will reappear in that same manner. The interests of the commercial fishermen and those of the sportsmen are not always the same. The commercial fisherman feels that he is the underdog, that the sportsmen always get the breaks, because, of course, they are more numerous and they have more votes. The commercial men believe the conservation department has been laggard and unconcerned too long about the lamprey. They think perhaps if the lamprey gets up the streams and into the inland lakes and starts to destroy game fish, then there may be more done. And there appears to be a strong possibility that Congress, during the present session, will appropriate a substantially larger sum to finance the fight against the lamprey. That, then, is the story of an industry that once was prosperous and now has fallen upon hard times. This is the last broadcast for a while in our series, Western Michigan at Work. Next Tuesday evening at this time, we will present the first broadcast of a new series of programs called Michigan My Michigan. This new program is going to bring you each week an episode in the history of the Wolverine State and a feature story about some phase of Michigan life today.
You have been listening to Western Michigan at Work, presented in the public interest by this station. Be sure to be with us next Tuesday evening at 7 for the first broadcast of the new program, Michigan, My Michigan. And now, organ music featuring Buddy Cole.